in case we do need them to fight at some point. Far below, Cricket echoed, staring off toward the setting sun. It does make sense, if everything in that vision was true. But how are we going to find this abyss? Do we have to search all of Pantala? Kibley scratched his head awkwardly.
Well, he said, it would be helpful if we had someone who could talk to the scavengers for us.
He glanced sideways at Sky and Ren. Absolutely not, Ren said. I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm very sure I don't like the sound of it.
What?
Sky tore his gaze away from a chipmunk that was adorably nibbling something near his talons.
Sorry, what?
We're offering to take you to the other continent, Cricket said, to meet humans from all the way across the sea. Can you imagine? Just think, what are they like? How different are their lives from yours, and how much is the same? Isn't that just amazing to think about?
I'm all right where I am, thank you, Ren said.
I don't need another continent full of people to worry about. This one is quite sufficient.
But you could save so many dragons, Kibley said. If you help us find the Pantalan humans, and they can take us to the abyss, and we can stop the breath of evil. I mean, you'd be saving the entire world, basically.
Ren pointed at him. That does sound fun. Except for the part where I probably get eaten, and Sky probably gets evil breath, whatever that is.
Sky snort chuckled. Weave's the one with evil breath, at least first thing in the morning.
Hush you, Ren said, nudging him.
We won't let you get eaten,
Winter said in his most noble voice.
Every dragon on the quest would protect you with his or her life. I would gladly sacrifice myself to keep you safe.
Too much,
Kibley said, patting Winter's talon gently.
Very heroic and dashing, but you can take it down a notch.
I can take care of myself. Sky's the one I'm worried about, Ren explained. He is not a super stealth or a fighting evil kind of dragon. He is a... But do the bad guys know about pandas? Because then I bet they wouldn't be evil anymore, kind of dragon.
Well, but, Sky protested. I mean, pandas. Have you seen pandas?
Is there any chance you're actually a Rainwing? Winter asked.
You can't take Sky into a war zone, Ren said, wrapping her arms around his neck as far as they would go.
I'd be all right, Sky said, nudging her head with his snout.
Everyone else could do the shouty stabby parts, and I could just talk to the humans. And maybe the other continent has something even cuter than pandas.
We have lots of different kinds of monkeys, Cricket said hopefully.
Snowfall could tell that Ren was not buying any of this, and that she was the one who made the decisions for these two.
Think like a human, she thought. Remember what it felt like to be Raven. What did they want? What did they worry about? What do I know that could change Ren's mind?
Human, she said. I mean, Ren. Listen. What if the agreement went two ways? You and Sky help us save dragons, and we help you save humans. Ren glanced over at Daffodil, who was tossing the baby hive wing up in the air and then catching her again as the dragonette giggled.
Keep talking. All the queens of the dragon tribes are here in Sanctuary right now, Snowfall said. In exchange for your help, we could issue an edict that dragons are no longer allowed to hunt or eat humans in any of our kingdoms.
Ooh, Sky said, nudging Ren again. Ivy would love that.
Every human would love that, Ren said. But would it work? Do dragons listen to their queens? How would it be enforced? And what if the next queen reverses the edict?
My tribe listens to their queen, Snowfall said haughtily. And there isn't going to be a next queen for a very long time.
It's worth a try, isn't it?
Kibley said to Ren.
It would probably save a lot of humans, even if some dragons disobeyed the orders.
I love this plan, Sky said happily.
Let's do this plan.
It is a great idea, Kibley said to Snowfall.
See, Link said, thwacking Kibley's wing with her own. I told you. Best queen ever. Snowfall fluffed out her wings and gave Winter a "Who's the best cousin for the throne now?" face, which was a little unwarranted since he'd never shown any sign of preferring Crystal. But he was the nearest Icewing she could make a smug face at. Truthfully, she thought the other queens would probably issue an edict like that with or without Ren's agreement to come to Pantala. Once they realized that scavengers could think and read and talk like dragons, she assumed they wouldn't be at all interested in eating them anymore. "No more pet scavengers either," Ren said, wagging her finger at Winter again. She might have noticed the wistful glances he kept casting at Daffodil. "That should be in there too."
"Unless they want to be dragon pets," Sky said, "or the hats are very cute." "Do humans love hats?" Winter asked hopefully. "I could get Daffodil a hat."
"No, we do not love hats," Ren glared at Sky. "And Daffodil would be the worst pet, really. She might be willing to stay and practice her dragon with you for a while, though, if you'd actually listen and not lock her up."
"And if you let her keep playing with Bumblebee," Cricket observed.
The hive-wing dragonette was now curled around Daffodil's shoulders, winding the human's hair between her claws.
"I promise," Winter said meekly. "No more pets. I'll tell everyone else."
He gave Kibble a suddenly horrified look.
"Smolder has a pet human. He's had her for years. We must fly at once to convince him to free her."
"Oh no, she's fine," Ren said. "We've met, and she's happy. Don't worry about her."
"Hmm," Winter said, subsiding. "Let's go talk to the other queens," Snowfall said. "You two can stay here and think about our offer, and we hope you'll still be here to discuss it when we return."
She beckoned imperiously to Kibble and swept across the clearing with Lynx trotting along beside her.
"Will this work?" Snowfall flicked her tail. "Sending a small group of dragons over to Pantala, armed with a talon full of tranquilizer darts, a line from a prophecy, and a scavenger?" She thought of the chillingly malevolent feel of Wasp's brain and the evil tendrils she'd felt wound all the way through it. "Is there anything that can save Tau and Bryony and Blue and Io and everyone else? Or is the prophecy right? And none of the tribes will survive." Part 3. Walls of Ice. Chapter 20. The night before their return to the Ice Kingdom, Snowfall had no dreams at all. She slept peacefully until quite some time past dawn and woke up slowly to rustling leaves, bars of sunlight, and several worried Icewing faces ducking away as she opened her eyes. Except for two. Lynx and Crystal stayed where they were, watching her. Lynx looked disgustingly cheerful, as usual, and Crystal wore a mask of boredom over something Snowfall now realized was nervousness. Her tail kept twitching, and she glanced at the trees occasionally as if she was thinking about flying away. "Good morning," Snowfall said, stretching.
"Crystal, I have made a decision. If you would like to return to the Ice Kingdom any time, for any reason, I give you my word I will not have you killed. Wait. Unless you come with an army to try and steal my throne, then I will probably have to kill you. So I guess I mean, if you would like to return to the Ice Kingdom any time, for any not-deposing Snowfall reason, you are welcome, and you'll be safe."
"Oh," Crystal said. Thank you. If it helps, I have no intention of ever bringing an army to steal the throne. I really don't want it."
"Weirdo," Snowfall said, but nicely. "Also, you have my permission to marry Gariel."
"I wasn't aware I needed that," Crystal said wryly, "but thank you for that as well."
Snowfall waved one talon.
"Permission, blessing, whatever you want to call it, your queen will not be mad. You will not be banished."
Crystal tipped her snout down for a moment, then looked back up with suspiciously shiny eyes.
"I appreciate that," she said.
"It is very silly," Snowfall said, that you are more emotional about me approving your mudwing than you were about me promising not to kill you.
I know, Crystal said, with a little laugh, wiping her eyes. I just came to say goodbye. I heard you're flying home today.
Yes, Snowfall said. We had an excellent Council of Queens yesterday, and I was an extremely excellent queen part of it, wasn't I, Lynx?
Absolutely marvelous, Lynx said.
We need a better name than Secret Stealth Team, though, Snowfall said. Anyway, the queens agreed that we'll all stop eating scavengers, and we chose the group that's going to go to Pantala to search for the Abyss and the Pantalan humans, which means I'll have to carry another map back over to that continent, but it can't be helped. Personally, I think they should eat it when they get there.
I can't believe it about scavengers, Crystal said, looking a little green. When I think, I just can't think about it.
I have a feeling a lot of dragons are going to be pretty horrified, Lynx said.
And some others are going to violently deny that it's true, so that they don't have to feel bad about themselves, Snowfall pointed out. But that is a problem for another day. Today, my problem is that going home means I'll have to rearrange all the names on the stupid wall again.
Oh, wow, the wall, Crystal said with a laugh. I totally forgot about that.
How can you forget about the wall? Snowfall said, shocked. You're still near the top of the first circle. I kept you there.
Crystal shrugged.
I guess when you're away from it for long enough, you realize how pointless it is.
Lynx made a face at Snowfall like, this is what I was saying. Remember that time you totally yelled at me? I was totally right, and look, she thinks so too.
Well, fine, Snowfall said. Say goodbye to our mudwing for us. I must go be inanely polite to the other queens for half the day before we can leave.
You sound a lot more like yourself today, Lynx observed.
Was that true?
Maybe a night with no visions had brought her back to herself completely. Maybe the visions were over? Snowfall tugged hopefully on the ring.
Nope, still stuck. She'd have to tell the guards to stay close enough to catch her in case she suddenly fell out of the sky on the flight home.
The queens had decided that face a great evil with talons united meant they should send one dragon from each tribe on the mission. Personally, Snowfall thought a team of 10 dragons wasn't the most stealthy idea, but she wasn't about to wade into the question of which tribes should be left out. Some of the choices were easy. They only had one hive wing, for instance, and Sky had to be the Sky Wing. And Tsunami didn't bother to ask anyone's permission to be the Sea Wing, although Queen Coral seemed fine with it once she arrived. Luna and Sundew convinced Hazel to let them be the Silk Wing and Leaf Wing representatives. Queen Thorn looked worried when Kibli said he wanted to go, but she agreed that he was the best choice. Snowfall could see how much she didn't want to lose him. Queen Morhen offered a brawny mudwing nearly twice the size of most of the other dragons, a volunteer named Bullfrog. Queen Glory had to choose two dragons. She settled on a serious-looking rain wing with the very silly name of Pineapple, and Moon for the night wing. Snowfall had the hardest choice, in her opinion, because she had two ice wings who really wanted to go. On the one talon, she wanted Lynx to come back to the Ice Kingdom with her, to join her new council and keep Snowfall sane. On the other talon, she trusted Lynx more than any other ice wing, and Snowfall knew for certain that Lynx was smart and clever enough to be very valuable on the mission. On the third talon, Winter was occasionally quite smart too, and she wouldn't miss him nearly as much. But on the fourth talon, would sending him really count if he was technically banished and not part of the tribe? Would Snowfall be risking the whole mission just because she wanted to keep her friend close to her? She didn't say any of that to them, but she did grouchily admit to herself that friend was the right word for Lynx after all. In the end, she chose Lynx. Winter would be useful in Sanctuary, overseeing the scavenger outreach project and keeping Daffodil safe. Snowfall did not like to think about how Wren would react if she came back from Pantala and someone had accidentally stepped on Daffodil. So the stealth team was gathered,
and there was a ceremony for them that involved a lot of awkward talon-holding and speeches from the queens. Boring, boring, Snowfall thought, and tried not to look at Lynx too often in case something stupid and wet happened to her eyeballs. She'll be back. She has to come back. She watched Sky instead, who was so excited about all his new dragon friends and his valiant purpose and heroic destiny and absolutely everything. Then she realized how much she was going to worry about his sweet, grinning face going into danger, and she had to fix her gaze on Bullfrog instead. There was no risk that she'd get sappy and sentimental about him. When the polite farewells finally began, Snowfall took a deep breath. There was something she had to do, even though it made her anxiety spike right up to the moons. She crossed the clearing to Sundew, who was sitting with her tail twined around Willow's, holding one of her talons. Willow looked as though she'd been crying all morning. Sundew tilted her head to meet Snowfall's eyes. Yes? We don't have weapons, like the Rainwing darts, to offer you, Snowfall said, nodding to the pile that Pineapple was sorting into pouches. But I wanted to give you something else, since I'm guessing you're going to be the leader of this team, or you should be, no matter what Tsunami thinks. And you're right, that our magic should have been able to help you, and if any piece of magic can help defeat that thing over there, I think you should have it. She unclipped the gift of stealth from her wrists, and Sundew sat up, shining like the northern lights. Magic? The Leafwing echoed. This is how I made my army invisible, Snowfall said, passing the wristbands to her. It felt a bit like snapping off her horns and passing them over, after so many days of having the reassuring magic weight of them on her arms. We call them the Gift of Stealth, and since stealth is literally in the name, and that's your whole mission, I mean, it just makes sense. Sundew put them on reverently, the pale silver metal strange against her dark green and gold scales. How do they work? Snowfall explained everything from the notes in the treasury, and Sundew practiced turning herself, then Willow, then both of them invisible. When they reappeared, Willow wrapped her wings around Snowfall. Thank you, she whispered in Snowfall's ear. I feel a little less worried now. What am I doing? Snowfall thought. Giving away one of the only animus treasures my tribe has? Maybe one of the last ones that will ever be made in this world? Giving up Icewing magic? To a strange dragon from a faraway land? Snowfall straightened her shoulders as Willow went back to Sundew's side. I'm choosing to trust them. This is the right thing to do. They need it to defeat the breath of evil, and we all need them to succeed. I'll bring them back, Sundew promised. When we've won and everyone is safe, I'll return them to you. Thank you, Queen Snowfall. Good luck, Snowfall said. She took a step back, glancing at the Gift of Stealth one last time. And then she turned and went up to the lake to find Winter. Hello, she said, startling him into dropping the fish he'd just caught. I hereby decree that you are not banished anymore, unless you would like to be. Also, you can go back to that school if you want to. I still don't care, she hesitated. But I guess there's a very tiny part of me that wants you to be happy, she finished in a rush. Winter dipped his front talons in the cold lake and smiled down at the water, looking a little surprised and embarrassed and pleased at the same time.
Thank you, Your Majesty, he said.
Gah, she said. It's too weird. Just call me Queen Snowfall. He laughed, and then his face turned serious again.
Snowfall, you're my queen, and the Icewings will always be my tribe, whether I'm banished or not. But Jade Mountain and Sanctuary? They've made me feel like I'm part of a bigger tribe, like I'm worth something more than a place on a wall.
I suppose you are, Snowfall said. It's possible, everyone is, but you didn't hear that from me. Good luck with that little daffodil human. Stay in touch, Winter. Snowfall made her way through all the polite goodbyes to the other queens,
and eventually found her guards waiting for her, ready to fly. Standing with them was Lynx, who also looked ready to fly. "Aren't you leaving on a mission tomorrow?" Snowfall demanded, frowning at her.
"Day after tomorrow, actually," Lynx said. "I'm going to fly home with you first, and then meet the others on Draboa's beach."
Snowfall did not let herself make the silly sky face she felt her inner dragon making. "Oh," she said, "very well. I suppose that's fine with me, because you need something from the palace. Dragons to say goodbye to?"
Lynx nudged her side and smiled. "Just want to hang out with you for a couple more days."
Snowfall scrunched her snout at her, so that she wouldn't either start beaming or burst into tears. "Well, fine. All right. I suppose that's fine with me, too." It was late in the day when Snowfall and Lynx and the other 10 ice wings reached the great ice cliff. Snowfall saw it first, ahead of them in the distance, huge and glowing red-gold in the sunset. "For thousands of years, it's kept all other tribes out of the Ice Kingdom. We always thought it kept us safe. I thought it was so important. I wanted to extend it all around us, so my tribe could huddle safely in our igloos and ice palaces, and no one would ever be able to get through our walls of ice. But if we'd all stayed hidden in the Ice Kingdom, Darkstalker's plague would have killed us. We needed dragons from other tribes, working together, to recognize his magic and find a way to save us. We needed hybrids like Typhoon, who could cross the wall and were spared the plague, to bring us those earrings. We only survived because of our connections to the other kingdoms."
Her wing beats slowed.
"And if the breath of evil comes here, if it lands in the Ice Kingdom first, we may need those connections again. Besides, I want to know what happens on Pantala. I want dragons to be able to come tell me. I want Sundew and Sky to be able to fly right into my kingdom and find me if they need to."
She veered suddenly into a wind current that dropped toward the cliff. Startled, the others wheeled around to follow her. Snowfall landed on top of the cliff. She could see the sheer face of it dropping away on either side of her talons. Lynx hovered beside her, beating the air with her wings.
"What's happening?" Lynx asked.
Snowfall adjusted her small, elegant crown. "Did I ever tell you what this does?" she asked, pointing to it. "It's the Tiara of Strength."
"All right, all right. Stop laughing.
It makes me very, very, very strong, so laughing at me is an even less good idea than it usually is. Anyway, my point is that I've hardly gotten to play with it at all, since this turned out not to be the punching dragons in the snout expedition I thought it was going to be."
"I, for one, am quite glad we didn't have to punch any dragons in the snout," Lynx observed.
"Want to see how strong I am?" Snowfall asked.
She slammed her fist into the ice below her. Cracks shot out from the spot where her talons met the ice, and the surface below her shook. She punched it again, as hard as she could, and then had to lift into the air as the cliff began to shake harder, and chunks of ice broke off and started avalanching down toward the snow below. Snowfall hit the cliff again and again, triggering more cascades of ice and snow, until she had punched a pretty impressive hole in it, if she did say so herself. Oof! Now her fists hurt, and her muscles ached, and she was very tired. But the look on the other ice wings' faces was worth it.
"That's amazing," Lynx said, flying down to swoop through the gap in the cliff, as if to make sure it was real. "Does that break the spell? Can other tribes fly through here safely now?"
"I'm not sure," Snowfall said. "We'll come back soon with many more dragons and tear down the rest of it." She shook out her claws with a wince. "Maybe I will let someone else wear the magic strength tiara, and I will do the ordering everybody around part instead."
"Wow."
Lynx gathered a talonful of snow and packed it around Snowfall's claws.
"What happened to everyone is evil and can't be trusted?"
Snowfall looked at her severely. "I have been 6 different dragons and a human this week, and only one of them was evil. I am basically an expert on other dragons now. And with my knowledge of everything, I can now say for a fact that several dragons are not evil after all.
Several dragons? Link said in mock surprise. Are you sure?
Snowfall flicked her with her tail. I might even say most dragons. Still dubious about you, though. Pretty sure that face you make when you think you've won puts you right into the evil category.
Fair, said Lynx, grinning. As long as I still win.
She glanced up at the darkening sky, where stars were starting to glitter.
It's getting a bit late to fly the rest of the way to the Ice Palace. Maybe we could make camp in the snow. What do you think? One more night away from the palace?
Yes, let's do that, Snowfall said. She turned to the guards. If that's all right with all of you. They did a lot of startled blinking before one of them said,
Of course, Your Majesty. Whatever you wish is fine with us.
It was pretty thrilling to be back in the Ice Kingdom, to be making their beds in piles of snow again. Snowfall rolled around in hers for a while, cleaning all the dust off her scales, until she felt shiny and cold again. Then she curled up and stared at the opal ring. It had been silent all day. Were the visions really gone? If so, why was it still stuck on her finger? Was it just lying in wait to spring a whole bunch of terrible dragons on her at once? Hey, magic ring, she whispered. I put up with all your visions. I told those Pentallan dragons what you showed me. I made peace with scavengers. Is that what you wanted? Twinkle, twinkle, smug twinkle. I'm all right with no more visions, Snowfall whispered. No more visions would be totally fine. But if you do have to give me another one tonight, could it please be the one I asked for? Can you tell me what happened to Animus magic and why it's not working? If there's a way to fix it, we could use it to help the Pentallan dragons. Or if not, then it would be good to know that too, so we can stop worrying about it at least. What do you think? Twinkle, twinkle, twinkle. Mysterious opal thoughts. All right, Snowfall said, feeling her eyelids droop. Whatever you can do. She yawned. Thanks. And let herself slip into sleep.
Chapter 21.
It is raining. As always.
She hates the Mud Kingdom.
Hates everything about it. From the gloppy swamp between her talons to the incessant gurgling sound of water coming from somewhere. It's never warm enough, and she never feels dry, even when she retreats to her cave. She is constantly worried that Queen Crane might find her, and she'll have to flee to yet another kingdom. But she couldn't stay in the stronghold anymore. She's not sure she'll ever be able to set her talons in the desert again. At least, not until Queen Scorpion is dead. Which won't be for a long time, thanks to those healing and longevity spells Jerboa was forced to make for her. I said no when it mattered, though, she reminds herself. I saved the Skywings. And probably even more dragons than that. Queen Scorpion wouldn't have stopped. She would always want more. More land, more power, more of Jerboa's magic. It's almost as if she was the one losing her soul, not me. Jerboa flexes her talons, trying to test herself. Do I feel like murdering anyone today? Not particularly. How about some senseless violence? Is that on the agenda? Don't think so. How do we feel about tiny dragonettes? Still think they're cute? No impulse to kill any of those, right? She sighs and rests her head on her claws. She's always wanted a dragonette of her own, but Queen Scorpion kept her away from other dragons. And now that she's a fugitive, that dream is even further away than ever. Unless I use my magic. She sits up, startled to full alert by the idea. I could do that. I think I could. I could enchant a rock to turn into a dragon egg. Would that work? Maybe it needs to already contain some kind of life. I've never brought something to life before. That might be on the list of things animus magic can't do. But I could steal someone else's egg and change the dragon inside into a sandwing like me. Hang on. That might have been an evil thought. She rubs her temples, reviewing the choices. Right, yes. Stealing someone else's egg would be bad. What if I found a different kind of egg? A snake egg or ostrich egg, and changed it into a dragon egg? And whatever's alive inside, I make it a dragonette. My own dragonette, who would love only me forever. She is so delighted with this plan that she almost runs out into the rain to find an egg right away. But she stops herself on the threshold of the cave. Wait. Be cautious. It would not be safe for a dragonette to be part of my life right now. If Scorpion found us, she could use it against me. Bide your time, Jerboa. Scorpion's not the only one enchanted with longevity. I could live forever if I wanted to. If I'm patient, she'll be gone, and then I can create my dragonette, and we could return to the Kingdom of Sand and live in peace. Yes, really good plan. Not evil, right? Right, not evil. Hugging herself with her wings, she rolls against the cave wall and falls asleep, dreaming of her beautiful dragonette. She is standing in the desert again at last. 60 years of hiding was quite long enough. And quite long enough for anyone to be queen, especially the power-mad kind. Queens die in their sleep of unexpected heart attacks all the time. It might have happened at any moment, even without any magic help. And really, I mean, 60 years? More than long enough. Her daughter is perfect, and now she is perfect here, in this perfect place, surrounded by sand and wind and wide, wide open sky. Welcome home, she says. Jerboa III doesn't answer. She is in a bit of a snit because she just found out about Jerboa II, which was an accident. Jerboa herself, the first Jerboa, hadn't planned to ever talk about the daughter who went wrong, because it didn't matter. She was gone, and now Jerboa and the next Jerboa were together, and they could just be happy, couldn't they?
I want a different name, says the smaller Jerboa. One of my own.
Why? Jerboa is a lovely name.
Because I want to be my own dragon, she huffs. Not just one of your hundreds of copies of you.
I haven't made hundreds of copies of me, Jerboa argues. Although, come to think of it, she could, couldn't she?
She could test them out and see which ones are pleasant company and which ones end up as sullen grouches.
She's sure she was never this bad-tempered, so it's not like the current version is that close a copy of her.
Maybe a closer copy would be nicer to have around.
Was that an evil thought? Her mental voice whispers, as if from very far away.
You could have made hundreds, and I would never know, little Jerboa points out. I could be number 847 or something.
847 dragonettes sounds exhausting. Even if she only tried them one at a time, Jerboa wouldn't want to go through that again and again, teaching each one how to hunt, listening to their endless questions. But I could try a few until I get a quiet, pleasant one.
Jerboa doesn't even have a good nickname, her daughter mutters. Jerb? Jerby? Boa? I guess you could call me Boa.
Jerboa shrugs. Ungrateful. That's what this one is. If I call you Boa, she says, will you stop sulking and appreciate this lovely desert?
Fine,
Boa snaps, which doesn't sound like not sulking to Jerboa, but she lets it go for the moment. I don't have to put up with this forever. If she becomes unbearable, I can always start over.
Wait, wait, whispers the voice. And then what? You'd kill this one? Didn't we decide once, long ago, that killing dragonettes was always evil?
Even my own, she argues back. Ones I made myself?
Yes, I think so.
It is hard to imagine disposing of this one neatly, and she can't just let her go wandering off. No one can find out that the long-missing Sandwing Animus is still alive. Terboa does not want the hassle. What if I simply fix her a little, then? Just a little spell to make her more agreeable. Obedient would be a good start. Helpful would be nice, too.
She sinks her claws into the warm sand, picturing how perfect small Terboa could be. But evil? Whispers the little voice again. Maybe?
Shush you, she whispers back. I made this dragon. I can perfect her if I want to. Nobody gets hurt.
No, no. I don't have to worry. That's not evil at all.
She's flying over the ocean, wondering if they should try shark again. The last time it was a bit oily, but this time Boa could prepare it differently. That was such a good idea, making Boa an excellent cook. A shame she had to add an extra spell to also make her enjoy cooking. She thought just being good at it would be enough, but no. Boa tends to be lazy. If she could do nothing at all, that would be her preferred life.
Terboa thinks she wasn't always like this. When she was little, Boa had so much energy. Perhaps one of the spells went a little awry. Perhaps making her more placid, less argumentative, more likely to say yes to everything. Perhaps that resulted in a bit of laziness, too. She'll try again. Calibrating the right personality can be quite difficult, it turns out, even with magic. She isn't in the mood for shark, after all. She'll make Boa go get them a camel. It'll be good exercise for her. As she swoops back down to the beach, she spots something odd. Boa is crouched in the surf building a sandcastle. But the castle is building itself. Terboa flips through several stages of panic before she realizes what's really happening. Boa is using one of the objects Terboa enchanted, the stone that builds them a new home each time they move. But for a moment, she thought Boa had her own magic, and that was terrifying.
What are you doing? She asks, as she lands in a squelch of wet sand.
Sand castle, Boa replies serenely.
Her tail swishes lightly as the waves wash over her talons.
This is not a toy, Terboa hisses.
She snatches the stone out of Boa's claws. Boa blinks and bows her head.
Sorry.
You never touch Mother's magic things.
Boa tips her head and looks slowly up at her.
Can I have magic too? I think I'd like some magic things of my own.
No, no, no. Terboa shakes her head. Magic isn't safe. It's very, very dangerous. Only very special dragons should have it, and that's why it's so rare. Only one animus dragon at a time. That's the rule.
This is a lie, but Boa will never know that. For a while, Terboa knows, there were 5 animus dragons coexisting in Pyria, 1 in the Ice Kingdom, 2 in the Kingdom of the Sea, 1 in the Night Kingdom, and herself. She doesn't know exactly what happened to each of them, but they're all gone now. Everyone but her. Sometimes she casts a spell, just to check, but everything is quiet, peaceful, much less worrying that way. Maybe she's a little bit right. Maybe that much animus magic in the world at once was like too many dragons drinking from an oasis at the same time. Maybe they sucked all the magic out of the world. Or maybe the magic is taking a break, waiting for a future generation of dragons before letting another animus hatch.
There are rules, Boa says. About the magic?
3 moons. She talks so slowly. It's like all her words have to wade through the mudwing swamps to make it out of her mouth.
Absolutely, Terboa says. 1 animus dragon at a time. If there are too many, can you imagine how dangerous that would be? They could get in a fight, start throwing spells around, and destroy the whole world by accident.
But, Boa says,
even more slowly.
One animus dragon could also destroy the whole world just by herself.
You don't have to worry about that, Jerboa says. I'm the only animus dragon right now, and I'm not going to destroy anything.
Boa looks out at the sea, thinking something at the speed of fossils forming.
Couldn't I have just a little bit of magic? She says finally.
Magic is also dangerous for your soul, remember? Jerboa says. I want to protect your soul, sweetheart. Let me do all the magic and take all the risk on myself, and you stay safe.
All right,
Boa says with a sigh, and Jerboa can sense that one of her spells is kicking in, the one that stops Boa from arguing with her. That was a great one.
Still, this Boa definitely needs a few tweaks,
and something to make her stop growing. Jerboa enchanted herself to stop at a normal dragon size. If they both live for thousands of years, as Jerboa is planning, it would be very inconvenient if they wound up absurdly gigantic. She'll make Boa stop just a bit smaller than her, so they'll always look like mother and daughter. Maybe she could add a little fear into the mix as well. If Boa is more scared of animus magic, she won't keep asking for it. And then she'll keep her grubby talons off Jerboa's stash of magic items. Yes, this is a good idea.
Did she once have second thoughts about her magic spells? Wasn't there once a voice in her head that asked something?
She shrugs it off. It probably wasn't important.
She is curled beside the campfire at night, with stars twinkling overhead, and Boa nestled against her side. Boa is small again, and Jerboa has tripled the dragonette's usual love for her, so she's extra cute and affectionate. It was getting boring having another full-grown dragon around who never did anything new or surprising. Shrinking her down and starting her over as a 2-year-old dragonette has made things much more fun for the last couple of years. They've both been alive a very, very long time. Over 800 years. Can that be right? Jerboa tries to think. Boa has started over as a dragonette several times in those centuries, and Jerboa has lightly kept track of any other animus dragons over the years. She spotted 2 in the Night Kingdom, the granddaughter of a dragon named Whiteout, and then that dragon's great-grandson. None in the Ice Kingdom in all that time. 1 in the Kingdom of the Sea, in the royal family, but she didn't live very long after having her own eggs. Jerboa doesn't know why. She hasn't gone digging for more information. As long as they don't find out about her or do anything earth-shattering, she can ignore them.
Mother, I think you should make me an animus dragon,
Boa chirps out of nowhere. This again? Jerboa thought she'd stomped down all of Boa's curiosity about magic.
But it keeps coming up,
year after year. Despite all the memory wipes and implanted nightmares and personality adjustments, what is wrong with this dragonette? Why can't Jerboa fix it? She sighs. If you did have magic, she asks, or let's say, if you could cast just one spell, what would it be?
Boa thinks and thinks and thinks. Rewinding her age made her a faster thinker again, but she's gotten slower with each new spell since then.
I know, she says sweetly. It would be a teleportation spell, one that would bring me home to you anytime I wanted, no matter where I was.
Aw, Jerboa says, snuggling her closer. But you don't need that. We're never apart.
Is that a shadow flickering across Boa's face?
I know, she says. It would be just in case. Just in case something very bad happened and we got separated.
Jerboa is pleased. I can make that for you, she says. She plucks a seashell from the sand, a pale fan shape edged with dark pink.
Can't I?
Boa starts. But Jerboa gently taps her snout with her tail,
and she falls silent. It only takes a moment, and the spell is cast. This seashell will bring Boa to her mother instantly, at just a flicker of a thought from either one of them. It's quite neat, actually. 620 years ago, and 400 years ago, and 250 years ago, and a few other times. Jerboa can't remember exactly. Boa tried to run away. She doesn't remember any of that misbehavior now, of course. Each time Boa runs, she thinks it's the first time. And it has been a real pain in the tail to drag her back. So it's perfect that now Jerboa will be able to do it with a snap of her claws. Jerboa pokes a hole in the shell, threads a coconut fiber rope through it, and loops it over Boa's neck. There, she says. See, you don't need magic. Just ask me for whatever you need. And if I think it's a good idea, I'll make it for you. Boa nods faintly. She doesn't seem as delighted with the gift as Jerboa would like. For a moment, Jerboa considers making her more grateful. But really, it's too late now. Boa has ruined what could have been a very nice moment. Jerboa sighs. 1,000 years. Maybe it's time for something new. What if I made you a brother? She asks Boa. Wouldn't that be fun? Something flickers in Boa's eyes again. Jealousy? Poor dear. It would be hard to share her mother after all this time.
Would his name be Jerboa too? She asks.
Jerboa laughs. No, of course not. What do you want him to be like? Funny? Clever? Boa traces a shape in the sand with her claw.
You can do that? She asks. Make him turn out any way you want?
Of course, Jerboa says. We can even make him love to do all the boring stuff we hate, like gathering firewood or cracking the lobster shells. Boa stares at her talons with a strange expression.
I love gathering firewood, she says in an odd voice.
Oh, that's right. Jerboa added that to the spell a little while ago when she got tired of either doing it herself or listening to Boa whine about it. Something else, then, she says. Whatever we don't want to do. We can also make him age very slowly, so he stays a cute little dragonette for as long as we want. Oh, and we'll make him a really good sleeper, so he'll nap easily and fall asleep whenever he starts fussing. Not like you, Miss Up All Night. Boa tips her head up to the stars.
But I sleep really well, she says. I sleep all night, and sometimes during the day. I'm a really good sleeper.
Of course you are now, Jerboa says impatiently. So what do you think? Wouldn't you like a new toy to play with? Her daughter doesn't answer for a boringly long time. Just as Jerboa is about to snap at her, she suddenly turns and burrows under Jerboa's wing.
No, she says. No, thank you. Please, I don't want a brother. I like it just us. I want to be your only dragonette. Please?
Jerboa is surprised. Well, this is her own fault. Phrasing it like a question, instead of presenting the idea in a way that Boa couldn't argue with. Anyway, it's fine. Boa is enough entertainment on her own, especially during the periods when Jerboa makes her a talented musician or storyteller. Another dragonette would probably be a lot of trouble. Boa is trembling, shivers running through both their scales. All right, Jerboa says. Just us, no more dragonettes. Don't worry. Look at her, sounding all nurturing and kind. She's such a great mom.
Promise? Boa asks.
I promise, Jerboa says easily. It's always easy to make promises to Boa, since she can erase them from Boa's mind just as easily. If Jerboa decides she does want another dragonette one day, she'll have one, and Boa won't complain or even remember this conversation. For now, she'll have to think of something else to make their lives interesting. They haven't abducted an enchanted servant in a while. Maybe a rain wing this time. That would be pretty, and they don't eat very much. Yes, that would be a nice change of pace around here. She is very tired. They have been flying all day to get to their summer hut, and they weren't able to stop at an oasis on the way because there were so many sand wings milling about below. Every century, it seems like there are more and more dragons everywhere. Jerboa prefers to avoid them. After a few awkward incidents where Boa tried to get someone to rescue her, of all the nonsense. Her wings ache, and her head is fuzzy, and that is the only reason Boa is able to catch her unawares. Jerboa doesn't realize what has happened at first. She is frozen, one step inside the doorway of the cabin. Literally, frozen. No part of her can move, and ice is starting to travel rapidly up from her claws. She whips her head from side to side and finally spots Boa in the far corner, pointing something at her. The porcupine quills. Boa had gathered them all so carefully in the mountain forest, then bound them together with a length of thin vines. She'd shown them to Jerboa, proud and sweet, and asked for a new spell. "When I point this at my prey," she'd said, "I want them to freeze in place so I can catch them more easily." Jerboa had chuckled at her lazy, lazy daughter, but she'd given her the spell. Why not? Boa hadn't asked for a spell in so many years, and she'd been so good and quiet and biddable lately. Easier hunting was a harmless request. Or so she'd thought. "What are you doing?" Jerboa says with a hiss. She catches herself, and in the long pause before Boa speaks, she tries pouring honey through her voice instead. "Boa, dear, you've accidentally used your hunting weapon on me. Let me go." "It's not an accident," Boa says, trembling. "You're stuck now."
"It seems that way,"
Jerboa says. She's trying to remember the words of the spell. Does Boa have to say something specific to release the prey? The cold is crawling higher on her legs. She tries to breathe fire on the blocks of ice around her talons, but this is magic ice, and her fire does nothing.
"So now you have to listen to me," Boa says. "I want you to tell me the truth for once. How many spells have you cast on me?"
Jerboa barks a laugh.
"I couldn't possibly remember all of them. I've been trying to fix you for literally centuries."
Boa's eyes go a little unfocused for a moment. "Centuries?" she whispers. Jerboa tries to remember when the last memory wipe was, but she's too cold to think straight.
"Yes," she hisses instead. "Nearly 11 centuries."
"Three moons?" Boa presses her free talon to her eyes. "Why don't I remember that?"
Jerboa would shrug if she could move her shoulders.
"Because you keep erasing my memory," Boa answers herself. "That's why I get so confused. That's why you keep talking about things I don't remember at all."
"Let's be fair," says Jerboa. "You also have an uncommonly stupid brain."
"How would we know?" Boa flares. "Is any of it really me anymore?"
She brandishes the quills at Jerboa.
"I only love you because of magic," she says. "Right? You've been enchanting me to love you."
"No, that's all real," Jerboa lies, silkier now. "If you love me so much, let me go."
She looks down at the ice that now encases her legs and tail. Her scales are so cold. Her wings are raised slightly, immobile, but the ice will reach them any moment.
"It's not fair to make me love you when you don't love me at all."
Boa angrily wipes her tears away.
"I love you when you're not like this," Jerboa points out. "You're exceptionally unlovable right now."
"Well," Boa says, "I guess we can fix that, can't we? Just a little tweak here, a correction there. All you need is
this, right? She holds up an unrolled scroll. Uh-oh. Her boa spells. She should have been more careful, kept them all in her head the way she used to. But it was getting so hard to keep track of them, and some of them were complicated. It was just easier to make an enchanted scroll where she could write down whatever she wanted to change about boa, and it would happen. But boa wasn't supposed to see it. She wasn't supposed to get her claws on it.
Where did you find that?
Jerboa snaps. More obedient, Boa reads from the scroll. Even more obedient. Chew with her mouth closed. Stop asking about talking to other dragons. Forget that other dragons exist. Remember that other dragons exist and stop asking inane questions. Always let Mother have the bigger fish. She narrows her eyes. This certainly explains a lot. Jerboa has never been so cold. Guess what? Boa says. It turns out anybody can add notes to this scroll. Watch. She picks up Jerboa's quill and writes on the scroll. Green tail barb, she says slowly as she writes. Her tail barb turns a beautiful shade of emerald green. See? Exciting, isn't it? Boa writes on the scroll again. Normal color tail barb. And her tail goes back to normal. Jerboa can't feel her wings. The ice is up around her neck now. She can't even move her head to look at the rest of her. But you know what I really want? Boa says. More than a green tail, Mother. You might remember this, because I've asked for it before. More than once, I think. Maybe quite a lot, in all those memories you erased. I'd like to be an animus dragon.
No, never!
Jerboa tries to cast a spell with her mind. She tries to rip the scroll out of Boa's claws, but it only flutters feebly. Oh, sorry to disappoint you. For what? The 8 millionth time, Boa says, as the quill snaps in half. You actually can't stop me from writing it down, because I already did. She looks down at the quill with a smile, and it smooths back into one piece.
She's not going to save me, Jerboa realizes for the first time. Not ever. This isn't a negotiation. It's a final performance.
Boa has freed herself from her mother's spells. She doesn't need Jerboa anymore.
These are my last moments after all this time.
She finds she's not as sad as she would have expected.
She has lived a really, really long time.
And most of it was quite delightful when it wasn't irritating. Goodbye, Mother, Boa says, and she actually looks much sadder than Jerboa feels. She's crying, but Jerboa doesn't know if those are real tears or ones caused by the spell that makes Boa love her.
I only have a moment. One last spell. Not to save myself. Just to make sure that Boa isn't as triumphant as she thinks. Something to ensure she never, never forgets me.
She casts the spell on Boa herself, making her daughter her last animus-touched object. And then she is gone. Chapter 22. She is free. She can't believe it. Boa steps toward the block of ice that has her mother trapped inside.